So do you recall, you know, the first time you crossed paths with Shawn, either hearing her music or seeing her perform?
Very vividly, you know. I think I've even, somewhere along the line, I probably told a story. Yeah, I went to see her. I had heard about her, of course, you know, this would be 1980-ish, you know. I'd heard about this great new singer who was singing with Buddy Miller, because at that time, Shawn, myself, and Buddy Miller, and Jim Lauderdale, and Larry Campbell, we all were sort of part of a, you know, a little bit of a scene of musicians here in Manhattan. I'd heard that Buddy Miller had a new singer, and I was a little bit new to town myself, and they were playing at this club, The City Limits, which is not too far from here. And I went down to see them, and I vividly remember being knocked out by her, you know, even though it was kind of a country rock, you know, cover band. I couldn't tell you what song she did, but she sang with Buddy, and she stepped up to the mic and did a few on her own, and she was just great. She was great. There was definitely something about her I found compelling right off the bat, you know.
Can you try to expand on great and compelling, like individual elements?
Well, it would be hard for me to remember exactly what it was that night, but, you know, I was moved by it. And, this is a good time to find the words that I'm not sure I totally recognize everything that was great about Shawn, but, you know, she just had that gift where she sort of took you to sort of this, her internal space. It was a very easy transition. And, was it Jackson or somebody had that quote about her, you know, she has the ability to have suspend time at her best, you know, and I'm sure I recognized an element of it, but I didn't really get it till I think I went to see her play by herself. It must have been in a very same period of time. Like, I don't remember where, probably the Bitter End. And, she was just phenomenal. You know, she was doing mostly cover tunes, and she also had that gift to sort of effortlessly, you know, make the cover tunes her own. She would change them in dramatic but very natural ways. And, it's a gift, really. It's very musical. Didn't seem very thought out. Didn't seem contrived. It seemed really authentic. She didn't seem like someone who was trying to make it or be a star or anything like that. It was just who she was, you know, which is definitely the kind of artist that I'm more compelled by. Not that I can't appreciate other kinds, but on a personal level, I find it more compelling. And she was kind of coming from all the places that I sort of like, which is you could tell she sort of understood pop music, and she sort of had a thing about country music and even R&B and soul. You know, back in those days, she would do R&B and soul covers too, you know. So it was great.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah, no, thank you. And so you started collaborating fairly early on in her professional career when she started recording. And
yeah, I guess so. She wasn't really writing songs when I met her. She may have written one. She may have written I Don't Know Why at that point, but to be honest, I can't remember. But I was always sort of writing. Can't say they were good songs, but I was always writing. And even at that point had a band in which I was writing songs for the band and stuff. So I think I encouraged her. I said, hey, you know, what are you doing in a cover band and all that stuff? And why aren't you doing your own thing? And why aren't you writing songs? And
what was her answer?
I don't think she had a good answer. I think I don't know what her take on it would be, but I think I helped nudge her in that direction, you know. I think she was still trying to get a sense of who she was or where she belonged or what she was doing. And, of course, back in those days, you know, it's interesting. The goal of everybody that I knew was to just make a living playing music. I think it's probably different now, or at least I don't recognize that as a goal so much. But, people are sort of culturally inundated with the need to be successful and be stars and be part of the industry. But back in those days, it just seemed like an enormous thing that you could play your guitar or go out and sing and make enough money to pay your rent and buy food. And I'm off on a tangent. I can't draw it back in. But there was that element too, you know. I think, you know, being in cover bands and playing in bars was, of course, a way to make money. But in any case, I think I nudged her along. And, of course, she helped me immensely too. We were immediately, it was a good collaboration. It had its own friction, But it was good. It was good, you know.
So, and I know you've been asked this one before too, but how do you describe what works in this collaboration? And let me start by asking, are you the Elton John to her Bernie Taupin, or is it more like you guys, you know, trade musical ideas and lyrical ideas back and forth throughout?
Well, you know, I try not to even define it. I try not to define our roles because I think it just kind of hampers the potential of anything. And we've been, you know, writing together for like 20 years. So, I mean, if I had to define it, and people tend to sort of see me as the guy who writes the music and that she writes the lyrics, but I think it's a little more amorphous than that. I mean, in general, it'll start with some sort of musical idea for me to some stage of completion. You know, a lot of times I try to hold myself back and not really define my musical idea, but keep it kind of vague and amorphous, hopefully still in a compelling way, so that she can fill in the blanks. And other times I'm just too excited and I go ahead and I'll have a very firm idea of everything, what the melody should be and stuff. It really varies. The one thing that's never, ever happened is that she's written the lyric that I've taken and written music to. That's never happened. But, you know, Sean has a very strong lyrical voice and, you know, she really owns that area of it. I mean, I think I'm a decent lyrical editor, but the lyric thing really comes from her. I mean, there have been moments, I'm sure, where I've thought of a line or two, but basically the intent and the essence of the lyric is always Sean's, you know.
Well, why does Sean Colvin matter?
I'll tell you one thing that I think is phenomenal. I mean, I could sit here and tell you how great she is as an artist and, you know, in the world that she sort of creates as an artist, which I think is really unique. And maybe I should do that. But, you know, one thing that I thought about is that Sean, as a template for what a career in music can be, is a pretty powerful template in that what she sort of achieved doesn't happen anymore. I mean, here's someone who started out, you know, playing in bars and clubs, playing solo, playing in cover bands, doing this and that, slowly formulated her own identity over time, which didn't happen until her late 20s or early 30s. You know, of course, now that would be all over for somebody. And totally did it on her own. The industry came to her. She made, you know, 3 or 4 records, you know, that did okay, but they were not phenomenal successes. And her career had this slowly developing, ever slightly upward arc to it over 5 or 6 years until Sonny Came Home, right? Which, for better or worse, you know, sort of established her, gave her some substance in the industry. And she now has a career for the rest of her life. I mean, it's incredible. You can't, that'll never happen again. When is that, who could you say, who could you point to say that's going to happen? You know, so little interest is given to the arc and longevity of people's careers. So I think it's pretty impressive, and I think it's a great template. You know, I find it a very compelling story. I find her story of her career very compelling. I'm sure that's not why you want to know why Sean matters, but it's an interesting side note. When she's on, it's really, you know, her, the combination of her stage patter and performing has become an art. You know, in the old days, she would just get up there and sing songs, and then slowly the way she would interweave her narratives with her songs and the subtle way in which the narrative sort of drew you in to her world in a non-contrived way, it's just incredibly impressive. Like, you know, I don't play with her that much anymore, although, you know, a long time ago I used to play with her all the time, but the few times I've gone and played with her in the last 10 years, you know, I just kind of sit there. I mean, I forget to play because her stage narrative is so compelling and so spontaneous. It's really incredible. It's an incredible art form, it is, and it's so uncontrived, you know. And that's, I mean, I guess that's the essence of Sean, you know. It's like you really get the sense that it's her, you know, and there's very little between the audience and her. It's great art without great artifice is sort of really kind of what it is. It's very compelling. and rare.
Does a process like this, when you guys sit down and, you know, say, okay, let's get serious about making the record, does it start with a mission statement in a way? Does it get to the, say, you know, sort of the visioning of what this is supposed to be, or is it more organic?
Until this record, I would say no. Until this record, it's always been like, can we come up with 11 songs that we like to record, you know, period. And then we'll see if they hold together cohesively at the end. I think that, you know, probably since the last record was a tad overproduced for various reasons, I think that our, if there was any mission, and it's just a general one, was to make a simpler record, which I think we're doing, and maybe not so worried about having hits or anything like that. You know, she's on a new label, and you know, just think it's going to be a more pared down record, less production, less pop vocabulary on it, musical vocabulary. That's it. Lyrically, no. Stylistically, no. You know, we sort of just, in the early stages, it's interesting. I think Sean feels the same way, although you should probably ask her. It's like, I never think about editing myself or my impulses ever. It's only as the thing progresses that you start to get a sense of what the whole is, and then you start wanting to edit it and so that it's cohesive and see if it really fits. But I find it kind of a waste of time to think about that stuff too early. Mm-hmm. I just like reacting spontaneously and being in the moment.
I know you're not thinking about this because you said you weren't, but I'm curious, though, since it's part of the business, is what's the market for Sean's music now? Because the radio, and I know this, you know, the radio game is like really frustrating for music producers, I guess, if they're thinking about wanting to get stuff played.
Well, if that's what you're into doing and that's what you're good at, I guess it's not frustrating. And you have to respect people who do it and do it well and have hits consistently. I'm not sure that's where our energy is going on this record. I mean, I'm not frustrated by it. In fact, it feels liberating not to worry about it, to be honest. It feels totally liberating. It feels like, let's just make a record that we love. And I'm not worried about it. I mean, realistically speaking, women in their 40s aren't going to have hit records. It's just not going to happen. It just doesn't happen. I mean, the last time it happened is probably when we won the Grammy for Sonny Came Home. I don't know how Sean was then, but I think that was the last window of people, both men and women, having a shot at, you know, having top 40 hits. I think the industry changed dramatically after that, and it's still there. It's not going to happen. I mean, she can have a big record or a artistically successful record, even a commercially successful record, but it's not going to happen because she has a song played on top 40 radio. It's going to happen for any other number of reasons. It's much harder to happen this way. I mean, the easiest way to have a hit record is to get a song played on the radio all the time. But, you know, it could still happen. And just not going to get, I'm not going to obsess about it.
Well, I mean, like you said, it's liberating not to have to think about it.
I love pop music, but it's liberating with an artist like Sean. Just forget that. I mean, we never thought about that when we did Steady On or anything. So, and I can't even really say we thought about it when we did Sonny Came Home, although that's probably not true. We probably thought about it a little more.
So I'm wondering if it's liberating and frustrating in terms of, you know, I'm thinking of the artists who are, by all rights, you know, still on an impressive creative arc, an interesting creative arc, but that there are fewer and fewer places that would even play their records.
Yeah, well, that's radio. So, yeah, I don't know. We could spend our entire hour together just talking about the essence of the nature of the business and what's wrong with it, what's right with it, what the potentials are, what the future could be, what the past was. I don't know. Yeah, you can either get bogged down in it or...
What you're doing can't change it, so it's like, why bother?
Well, it can't change it. I mean, great records are always... can change it, I guess. You know, a great record can do what it can do. But it's not like we're putting direct effort into changing it. Or maybe it's something we should be doing. It's certainly something I've thought about. But it's not what I'm doing with Sean, let's put it that way.
So let me, I want to see if you'll share some of the thinking or some of the music tracks with us a little bit here.
Well, just, absolutely.
You know, talking about whatever you'd like to talk about, because I'm grateful that you'll share this part of the process with me.
Well, here's one that's pretty close to being done. I think it needs some background vocals, maybe, or a harmony part. I'm not sure. I mean, I would say at this point nothing is done, but things are pretty close. Let me see what we got here.
I put on my finest summer dress, so light and thin. It was my best. I brushed my hair, held my breath. I went out to face the wilderness. I went out to face the wilderness.
It's called Summer Dress. This is actually the first song we wrote for the album. What was this like? This one was interesting because it was based on a musical idea I had. And sometimes my process with Sean is interesting because I'll sort of have a preconception of what I think the record of it should be. And as Sean begins to own the song more, you know, when she finishes the lyrics and she starts performing it, she gets her own take on it, I have to more and more let go of what my preconception is and really go to where she is with it. And this one, it was a little bit harder for me to let go of my preconception, but I'm glad I did. It, you know, invariably, you know, it's always better to go where she is on it, you know. Whenever she feels strongly about something, you need to pay attention to it because it's generally the right way to do it. Sometimes she doesn't feel strongly about it, or she'll just like what I'm doing. She'll go, oh, that's fine. And then other times she'll really feel like, no, it's got to be more like this. And you really got to go to that place, obviously, both as a songwriting collaborator and as a producer.
So in some ways you're an options generator in terms of music?
Oh, yeah, that's a great expression. I'm told I'm endless options. It never stops. It's probably, it's a curse and a blessing, you know. It's a good thing, but sometimes, you know, turning the valve off is a good idea as well.
Yeah, I interviewed Leo Kottke once, and he was talking about sometimes you just got to get in and get out, you know, and stop thinking about how many different roads you could go down
right.
with a song.
Well, I love it. You know, it's like, yeah, it's... Well, I'm sure we could analyze my whatever my thing is with it, but basically, it's. I mean, I love music so much that it's kind of an endless joy for me to just try a million things. But he's absolutely right. You know, life is short. You got to just. If I could get in and get out, it's probably a good thing.
What else could you? Would you want to share from these sessions?
This is a cover song that she pulled out on us spontaneously, and it's live. And you'll recognize the song. Interesting because we started the day thinking we were going to do this other cover tune, which ended up being a disaster. We just couldn't do it. We spent an hour on it. It was just not working. And then I just sort of said, well, you know, what else you've been doing live lately? And she hadn't done the song about 10 years, apparently. She just started playing it. And everybody in the studio, she sat on that couch, she started playing it by herself, and everybody in the studio was like, you know, why aren't we doing that? She went in there, I think we played it three times, and the third time was a charm. That's it.
So you talked a little bit about her work with cover tunes earlier, but, you know, I'm also thinking the most recent one she did with the Beatles tune, and this one reminds me of not, and she doesn't do it with all tunes, but both of those, it's like slow it down, kind of bring the consciousness into the lyric maybe a little bit more or something.
Yeah, she's good at that. She's good at taking up tempo tunes and slowing them way down, I guess is kind of a trademark for. I don't know if I can, articulate about, what it is, but that's Sean. She just does it wonderfully. I mean, it's just a great idea to take rocking tunes and slow them way down. They become completely different, and you listen to them in a way you never had. I mean, some tunes work better than others, but, she could probably make an album of that. Tunes that used to rock.
Yeah.
In fact, I like that. It's the next one. Tunes that used to rock, and just all these, up-tempo, Maybe she'll do Brown Sugar by the Stones. What would be that? What would that be like?
It'd be great.
Right.
Well, I talked to her about that in Austin, and how, when the Beatles were making those records to begin with, it was for a undeniably up-tempo pop market. But some of those songs lyrically are deeply more reflective than the tempos that they were churned out in, 65 and stuff.
It's true, but I think the thing that was so appealing about the Beatles, certainly for me, and I suspect for Sean too, since our favorite Beatle record is the same one from our childhood anyway, is Beatle 65. Of course, not a real record, but they were inherently melancholy. Even in the rocking tunes, there was something melancholy, particularly in John's stuff. There was something always bittersweet, always about longing and the tinge of loneliness and sort of a sense of unresolution, and that was very appealing. Here's something that's sort of typical of our process, in that I had an idea for a piece of music, and in this case, it kind of flowed out really quickly and spontaneously, and so I basically recorded the track within an hour. Sometimes I get lucky and that happens. And, I can never really tell what pieces of music that I come up with that Sean is going to like or not. Sometimes she'll surprise me. Things that I don't think are very good, she'll take and transform them, and all of a sudden I'll go, wow, I didn't know it was that good, And then other pieces that I think are great, she'll just go right by her, But this is one that I really liked a lot, and I was really hoping that she was going to like. She did. I think it took her a minute, but she did. And I didn't have a melody or anything like that. I just had the essence of the track. I had some guitar chords and sort of a way to play them that I thought was compelling. And then she just kind of came back and she said, well, I got a melody for this. I was like, oh, let's hear it. And she just slayed me. The melody was great. But she had a title, but no lyrics. All right, this is what I gave her. Actually, okay, so I'll play you what I gave her. Sean's melody just transforms it to me, anyway.
I'm gonna die in these rooms.
For me, it's like just hearing Sean sing nonsense lyrics is very inspiring. It is. I was like, wow, okay, that's great. It's almost like I don't care what the words are, because hearing her just sing that melody is so great. Although I think these lyrics are going to be great.
So expand on that a little bit. So she does have a melody. She's got a few phrases.
If the process is that I'm writing the music and she's writing the lyrics, it'll most of the time be I'll come up with a musical idea and then she'll start sort of dancing around the lyrics. And her way of doing that is just sort of, sing a melody with sort of nonsense sounds and some words that sort of seem musical and compelling to her in some way. And then over time, over sometimes great periods and long stretches of time, she'll fill in the words, and it's an interesting process.
And you've worked with a lot of different artists, Roseanne and Marcone and stuff. So is this different from...
A little bit, yeah. It's a little bit different. But I should also say about Sean is that sometimes she'll take, sometimes she'll like the track I've done, and then other times she won't really care for it, and then she'll just take the song off on her own with her acoustic guitar and start transforming it. which is exciting too. Like that song Summer Dress, she definitely did that on, you know. Songwriting is, I try not to have any preconceptions about process. The process is completely uninteresting to me. It's just as long as you sort of, you keep the valve open and you can take it all in. You know, I like it in every shape and form, whether I, like with Sean, if I write the music first and then she takes a while and writes lyric to it, or sometimes with Roseanne, inevitably what happens is that she'll write a piece of lyric with no music and I'll take it and put music to it. Or with some people, it's the old, I'll sit in this room with two acoustic guitars and we'll just sit there and thrash it out till it's done. It's all valid and it's all exciting. It's all great. I like it all.
You know, I talk with Sean about her albums in some depth, you know, and you worked with her closely on the three. And I just wanted to give you a chance to reflect back, if you wouldn't mind, to picking a couple of tracks from the album that still, the albums that still resonate with you a lot, that, you know, either the stories that they're making or anything that sort of might give the listener a little bit of depth of flavor about particular songs, starting with the first album.
It's interesting. I haven't really listened to that first album in a long time. And the last time I listened to it, which is years ago, I didn't enjoy listening to it. I mean, I think the songs are good. I like the songs that I wrote with Sean, and I like the songs that she wrote on them a lot. I think it's good. It was the first album I produced, and I didn't really, you know, I think...
you hear all the mistakes or
something? Yeah. I didn't know that much about making records then. I mean, I knew about music, but there's more to making records than just the musical part. So I didn't know that much about engineering or the sonic part of making records, so I relied on other people for that, and was sort of, took me a few years to sort of slowly formulate my own ideas about that and have the confidence to execute them. So sonically, it's kind of hard for me to listen to that record. It just seems kind of overdone and kind of buried in reverb, but it's just, I don't really like it. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people seem to like that record, for which I'm grateful, so that's just me. And then I didn't really work with her until a few Small Repairs, which has a special place in my heart because it just kind of was an easy record to make, relatively speaking. And I kind of like everything on that record, you know. I do. That's my own personal favorite. There were definitely some special moments in the studio. If I Were Brave, like I remember when she did that, I thought that was phenomenal. This dude, she just kind of pulled that out, and it was great. And I remember cutting the track to the facts about Jimmy, and that just sort of flowed out. It was really easy to do. It was a lot of fun to make that record. Very simple.
So in retrospect, like If I Were Brave, you know, really does reflect her trying to make this big decision about having a child too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Which of course she did, and she's got this wonderful, adorable little daughter now. It does. I guess she was kind of poised to move on at that point, you know. It's like I've been friends with Sean for so long that I don't tend to see her life like that, in, you know, externally, like her process of, you know, it's just Sean to me. But I enjoy that record quite a bit. I thought it was, we brought, it was a good combination of my best stuff and her best stuff, you know.
And then a whole new you. Sean's on record describing it as a difficult.
It was really hard. That was a really hard record to make. It took a long time, and there were some things. There was a lot of sort of ill-fated dynamics on that record. One, Sean was kind of blocked lyrically, and she didn't seem all that involved in making it, and she was on Sony, and she had Sonny Came Home, so there was this sort of feeling like we needed another hit, and yet the reality was the window had already closed on older women having hits on the radio, but we didn't really take that in because we were being yapped at, like, oh, this could be a single. And so Sean was kind of blocked and maybe not as involved as she could have been, and I just kind of went overboard. I mean, I just kind of made a big pop record, and in retrospect, it just doesn't ring true to me. I mean, I think there's some decent songs in there, and there are even some compelling tracks, I think. But I don't think it was a good Sean Colvin record, you know? It's interesting. A lot of musicians will really like that record a lot, but I just think it's because of the production part of it. But I hear that record, and I just go, man, this was wrong. This was wrong. This is not a great record. And then, of course, the ultimate irony is that the label wasn't even remotely interested in it because they're like, oh, we can't really market this because she's not 17, you know. So it was kind of a double whammy. So it was hard to make, and then people didn't get it. I'm just not sure it's a great record, you know, at all. I think there are moments on it. There's a couple of songs on it that
I grew on me, but it did take a while.
Right. It seems like you got to hang with it to really get what's there. Mm-hmm.